Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the History of the Talmud, Part 5, which we're moving into that area of our history that we commemorate all too often, unfortunately. But that is the period of the destruction of the temple. We spoke last time about the first Rabban, or perhaps the second Rabban, depending on Rabbi Shimon, what Rabbi Shimon ben Hillel was called. But we spoke about the first Rabban, Rabban Gamliel HaZaken. And there's a fascinating statement. The Gemara in Sota, or the last Mishnah in Sota, actually talks about what happened or what was lost when various Talmidei Chachamim and various Jewish leaders passed away. And it says, Mishameis Rabban Gamliel HaZaken. It says, when Rabban Gamliel, the elder, passed away, Bitel Kvod HaTorah Umesa Tara Uprishus. So what happened? The honor of Torah had disintegrated or was gone, and so too Tahara, purity, and Prishus, and separation, disappeared with him. And there's an indication, at least by this Mishnah, that somehow during the time when Rabban Gamliel HaZaken, when Rabban Gamliel the Elder passed away, there was a watershed moment in the history of the Jewish people. And I want to talk tonight, hopefully, about two major, I guess, destructions or cultural destructions that were going on at the time. The first is what I call the death of purity and separation. What's going on inside the Beis HaMikdash. Internally, we know the temple wasn't functioning perfectly during the time of Rabban Gamliel, but at least it seemed to be functioning halachically. Towards the end of Rabban Gamliel's tenure, so all of a sudden, the Beis HaMikdash itself is no longer the place that it once was. And this is indicated by a number of statements that we'll find within Chazal. So we'll start with the first Mishnah in Yoma. The first Mishnah in Yoma, obviously the Kohen Gadol, the high priest's major responsibilities culminated with, of course, Yom Kippur, right? This was the most intensive of his responsibilities, the most specific and the most detailed, and certainly the most where the weight of the Jewish people rested heavily on his shoulders. And so the Mishnah in Yoma, in the first Perek, and in the first Mishnah says as follows, Shivas Yamim Kodim Yom HaKippurim, 7 days before Yom Kippur, Mafrishin Kohen Gadol Mibeso, they would separate the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, from his home, Lelishkas Parhedrin, Umaskinin Lo Kohen Acher Tachtav. What would they do? They would put him in a separate office or a separate dwelling place in the temple, and they would also prepare a backup high priest, Shema Yerabo Psul, lest something happened to him. So on the one hand, we could view this Mishnah as mere our usual and normative halachic anxiety, right? We're Jews. We're used to halachic anxiety. We don't ride horses because we might come to rip branches. You know, we don't take medicine on Shabbos because we might come to grind medicine. We know we have our usual halachic anxiety, so we don't let the Kohen live in his house for 7 days before Yom Kippur because who knows what could go on in his house. And so too, who knows, even though he's going to be stuck in the office for the next 7 days, who knows what's going to happen to him, so we prepare a second Kohen behind him. Or, let's view things from the perspective of the time period. If we start viewing things from the perspective of the time period, we may have an entirely alternative explanation. What would that alternative explanation be? We've lost trust and faith in our Kohanim. It used to be, I'm sure, I don't want to say I'm sure, but I'm pretty close to sure that Aaron HaKohen, when he did the Avodah on Yom Kippur, when he did the service on the Yom Kippur, I'm sure Aaron didn't separate him from his wife, for 7 days beforehand, and he didn't need to be separated beforehand. I would venture to guess that Shimon HaTzadik probably didn't have those same responsibilities. But once the high priesthood is being bought and sold for a price, and once you can no longer guarantee the status and standards that are necessary in order to be the high priest, all of a sudden things become much, much different. It's actually interesting, the Tosefta, remember we said the Tosefta is a collection of Tanaitic statements that weren't included in the Mishnah. So the Tosefta, Mesachas Yuma, Perek Aleph, Halacha Dalid, gives a little bit more detail to this situation. And it asks the question that I think is on all of our minds, Lama Mafrishin Kohen Acher Tachtav, why do we have a second Kohen or a backup Kohen? Shema Yirabos Psul, lest we find something wrong with him, some sort of deficiency that would require us to get another Kohen. Yishamish Tachtav. So what happens? The question is, what happens if it's a psul that goes away? You know what I mean? He becomes instantaneously impure. You know, and he needs 7 days to become pure before Yom Kippur. So now what happens? Backup Kohen takes the job on Yom Kippur. Right? So what happens when he's now pure? Who's the Kohen Gadol? Is it the new guy? Or is it the old guy? It's a good question. So it says, the Kohen Gadol chozer lekehuna gedola. So the original guy who became impure or had a psul for some reason, so he, assuming he's once again able to resume his role as Kohen Gadol, he goes back. And what happens to the vice Kohen Gadol? What happens to him? V'zeh shishimeich tachtav kol mitzvahs kehuna gedola alav. He basically gets treated as if he's the high priest. Problem is once he's the high priest, he can't go back to regular service either. So he can't do the high priest service because he's not the high priest. He can't do the regular priest service because he's the high priest. So he's stuck in eternal limbo land on this. So Rabbi Yossi Omer, Afa Pisha Amru, Kol Mitzvos Kuna Gadol Alav, Eino Kasher Lo Lekohen Gadol, Lo Kelekohen Yehedyot. Right, he can't be a Kohen Gadol, he can't be a high priest, he's not kosher to be a high priest, he's not kosher to be a regular priest. Okay, and now they bring a little story. Ama Rabbi Yossi, says Rabbi Yossi, Maise b'Yosef ben Elim mitzipori. So the case of Yosef ben Elim, who lived in Tzipori, Sheshimesh tachas Kohen Gadol sha'achat. Once he was called, he was the vice Kohen Gadol, he was the vice high priest, and he was called upon for 1 hour to do the service of the high priesthood. And now after he had done that, he's no longer, you know, he's in eternal limbo land. He can't be high priest anymore. He can't be a regular priest. Kishiyatza, when he came out, Amar Lamelech, Parvaseir, so he says to the king, he says, these animals, Shekarvu ayo Mishal Mihayu, Mishali or Mishal Kohen Gadol. Right? So he says, who gets, you know, the part of the stuff that I was, you know, involved in? Who gets it? What happens? Yada HaMelech Ama Amarlo. So the king was getting the hint that he was looking for a promotion, potentially. So he says, Maze Ben Elim. He says, what's up with you, Ben Elim? He says, Lo Dayeka Shishimashta Tachas Kohen Gadol. It's not enough that you got to be the privilege of being the vice president for 1 hour. Lifnei Misha Amar V'Aya Olam before God, Ela Shatam V'Akesh L'Tolach HaKuna Gedola. Right, so he says, now you want to be the Kohen Gadol forever? Get out of here. V'Ose Shah Yada V'Ein Elim Shehusa Min HaKuna Gedola. At that point in time, so Ben Elim realized that he was no longer the high priest. So why is this an interesting situation? You see here that there's a lot of movement going on in terms of the high priesthood. What seems to be just a simple Mishnah in Yoma is actually touching on a far greater issue, which is that the high priesthood was no longer the stable position that it once was. And perhaps this is what it means when it says when Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken passed away, that Tahara and Precious, that purity and separation disappeared. Yeah?
Quick, who is La Melech?
What? The Melech, the king.
There was a king at that time?
The king, the procurator, the leader, somebody. Unclear. Obviously. Unclear who it is. Unclear it is. At some point, meaning during the Hasmoneans, the king and the high priest were together, and then afterwards, as time went on, so they were separated once again. And then the governor, I mean, it gets complicated. Another story, another Tosefta in Yoma, in Halacha Ches of Perek Aleph. So it says, Ma'ase b'shnei kohanim, there are two kohanim, shayu ratzin v'olim b'kevesh. They were running up, apparently,
to do the service.
So the kevesh is the ramp up to the altar. So they were running up. Dachaf echad mehen Eschavero, you thought we fought over Alios. What happened? The two of them started pushing each other over who got to be there first. Most probably, they're arguing now over Trumas Hadeshen, basically who got to take out the garbage from the altar in the morning. But it was the first service of the day, so it was considered something very significant. Dachav Achad Mehen Letoch Dalad Amos, right? One of them pushed him, you know, they came within in four Amos of each other. What did he do? Natal Sakin V'takalo Beliba. He took his shechita knife and stabbed the other Kohen in the heart for cutting in front of him in line. Okay, this is what's going on in the Beis HaMikdash. You want to talk about what has happened to the temple. Again, first the Sanhedrin breaks down, right? Religious authority breaks down. Once religious authority breaks down, it's not far behind, is that the temple service itself. Stands up Rabbi Tzadok, and we're going to learn more about Rabbi Tzadok when we get to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, but Rabbi Tzadok was the one who, let's say, more than anyone else, saw the writing on the wall during this generation. He saw, the Gemara is going to say later on, that Rabbi Tzadok started fasting every day when he saw the writing on the wall. He fasted for 40 years, I think it said. And so he's the one who saw basically what was coming. So Rabbi Tzadok stood up, Amalo al Ma'alos Ha'ulam. He stood up on the one of the raised platforms in the sanctuary. The Amar Shmauni Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael. He says, "Listen to me, my brethren. Harehu Omer ki Metzalel mi Metzalei imatei Chalal biatu zekenecha b'shoftecha umadidu." He says there's a famous story of what we call the Egla Arufa, that if you find a dead body in between two lands, so what do? You measure it, right? You stand up and you measure it, and all the elders come and do the measurements. So he says, "V'nimdor al mi ra'uy la'vi Egla." Right, so he says, let's start deciding who's going to be the one who has to bring the Egla Arufa here, who has to break the back of the cow. So he says, Alaichal ol al Azaros. Is it on those who are in the sanctuary or those who are in the Azara, kind of the main area where everyone else is allowed? Ol al Azaros ka'u kol ha'amach harab v'chia. Everyone who was listening started to cry. V'achar kach ba aviv shel tinok amar lahem, Achenu ani kapar atchem. So comes along the father of this dead person, and he says, "I will be your kapara. I will be your atonement." Adayim bni miparper v'sakin lo nitma. He says, "What's the atonement?" He says, "Look, my son is still in the death throes, which means that there's no dead body in the sanctuary. Because think about what's going to happen. You're going to make every kohen Tame, impure in the whole temple. Like, think about like how bad that is, right? V'sakin lo nitma lamdecha shintuma. So basically, they had time to remove the. I'm not going to get into the technicalities of tuma and tara now. My point is what are we gaining from here? Is you have a breakdown within the sanctuary. The sanctuary itself is no longer a sanctuary. It's no longer a place where you can protect or you can guarantee what it is that's going on in there. No longer you can guarantee the purity of what once was. The Talmud Yerushalmi, again, back to Yoma, Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph, Ma'ase b'Shimon ben Kimchis, sheyata l'daber im ha'melech om erev Yom Kippur. So Shimon ben Kimchis is apparently the Kohen Gadol. He goes out to speak with the king on erev Yom Kippur. Okay? V'nitze tzinora shorok mipiv al bigda b'gada v'timaso. What happens? Someone spit on him, right, while he was out, and it was impure spittle, and now it's Erev Yom Kippur. He's got to wait 24 hours to become pure. Meaning, we got to bring the other guy in front of him. So again, what do you have? It's a lapse. It's something that could have happened, but it seems like all this stuff is just starting to happen now. Right, v'nichnas Yehuda achiv v'shimesh tachtav. His brother Yehuda takes the job instead of him. Bikuna gedola, and v'ras iman shnei banei kohanim gedolim biyom echad. They say that at least his mother, right, got a little nachas. What's the nachas? She got to see two of her sons as the high priests in the same day. Right, that's a great privilege. But again, what's going on here? You see here basically a failure or breakdown of the temple system of the purity. Of the purity there. Perhaps one of the most interesting things is the Mishnah Maseches Yuma, again, Perek Aleph Mishnah Hay. It's talking about the Kohanim, the Kohen Gadol would be kept up all night, so he shouldn't have any possible impurity that would happen to him over the night of Yom Kippur, so he would stay up all night, and the Ziknei Kahuna, the elders, would take the responsibility to learn with him, the children would take the responsibility to learn with him. So the Mishnah says, Masru Ziknei Beisdin, the Ziknei Kahuna, the elders of the Beisdin gave him over to the elders of the Kohen, of the Kahuna, of the priesthood. Valu Aliyas Beis Avtinas, they would bring him upstairs to the attic of Beis Avtinas. Vihishbiuhu, they would make him swear. Viniftaru Valchulahem. Vamrulo, Ishi Kohen Gadol, Anu Shluchei Beis Din. They say, O Kohen Gadol, we are messengers of Beis Din. Vatashlochenu, you are our messenger. Ushliach Beis Din, Mashmin Anu Alecha, B'misha Shachan Shemo B'Vayit Hazeh. We make you swear by the one who dwells in this house. Shelo Tishane Davar Mikol Shamarnu Lecha, that you won't change from everything we're going to tell you. Why? He may have been a Sadducee. He may have been a Pharisee. Who knows what he's going to do? He may not have been even educated enough to have known what he's supposed to do. It's a complicated service, right? So what happens? Hu poreshu bocheh, vehim poreshinu bochem. They both cry. Why is he crying? He's crying because they're accusing him. They're crying because they have to accuse him. But what are they both crying over? That this is the situation that it's become in the Beis HaMikdash, right? The Mishnah continues. Mishnah Vav in Perek of Yoma. Imaya Chacham, Doresh. If he was a Talmud Chacham, what would he do? He would be the one giving the shiur all through the night of Yom Kippur, right? Vim Lav, if he's not a Talmud Chacham, Talmidei Chacham and Doresh and Lefanav, they would teach him. Vim Ragil Lekros Kore. If he can read, if he's able to read, right, then you read for him. Vim Lav, if he's not someone who is able to read, who is a capable reader of the Torah, can you imagine? The Kohen Gadol is not a capable reader of the Torah. Korin Lefanav. Ubema Korin Lefanav, what do you read for him? Be'iov, be'ezro, be'divrei ayamim. Zechariah ben Kvutal Omer, pamim harbe karisi Lefanav be'Daniel. So first they say, usually they would read Job, Ezra, and Chronicles. Zechariah ben Kvutal, what does he say he used to read him? I used to read him Daniel. So, who cares? You read him Daniel. Fine, you look for something. Why is Daniel important? Daniel's written entirely in Aramaic. The point it's making is that the Kohen Gadol didn't understand Hebrew. Right? That's what we're talking about. So this is the situation we've come to. Okay? The Gemara in Yuma, Daf Ches Amud Beis, Tanya Rabbi Yehuda, V'chi Lishkas Parhedin Haisa, V'alo Lishkas Par Bilvati Haisa. Right? So he says, the Gemara wants to know why it calls it Lishkas, it calls it the office of Parhedrin. Wasn't it called the office of Balvati? So it says the Gemara, Batchila hayu korinosa Lishkas Balvasi. Right? They originally would call it the offices of Balvati. But what happened? Umitoch shenosin alav mamon lekahuna, umachliz venosa, a kol shanim eser chodesh kiparhedrin. They called it a parhedron, which is like a revolving door. Since every year was a different Kohen Gadol, so they changed the name. Right, because what was it? Kohuna Gedola was already, the high priesthood was bought with money. In fact, it tells the story of Marta Bat Baitus, who was this very, very wealthy philanthropist during the time. She marries a Kohen, right? A little bit iffy, the whole marriage, but that's besides the point. She marries a Kohen. She can't just marry any Kohen. She wants to marry the Kohen Gadol. So what's it called? Ayla Le Marta, the Gemara in Yuma Yirchas Amanah says, Ayla Le Marta Bas Baisus Liyanai Maka, Al De Ukme Li Yoshua Ben Gamlon, Bekohen Yeravrevei. She says, I want my husband, Yoshua Ben Gamlon, to be made the high priest, right? So she went and paid. They call the king here Yanai, it's not Yanai, that's a generic name for any assimilated Roman type king. And in fact, the Mishnah Yevamos, Perek Vav, Mishnah Dalet, talks about Marta Bat Baisus, how even though she was an almana, she was a widow, how nevertheless her husband managed to become the Kohen Gadol. Right? It says, Kohen Gadol the lo yisa almana, a Kohen Gadol is not permitted to marry a widow. Bein almana mina erisin, bein almana mina nisuin, doesn't matter whether she was just betrothed or she was fully married, either way she's considered a widow. He should only marry a younger woman. Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shimon, Machshin, Bibogeres, Loisa Mukas Eitz, etc., etc. And then the Mishnah says, "Umaisa b'Yoshua ben Gamla," right? A case of Yoshua ben Gamla. Then what happened? Shekidesh is Marsa bas Baisus. He married Marsa bas Baisus. Uminu Amelech Lios Kohen Gadol, and magically, he got appointed to become the high priest. It's amazing how this happened. Right, the Kinsa Shomeres Yavon. Okay, so what happens? He ended up marrying an Almana. Again, and he married her anyway, and he ended up being, again, a part of a prohibited marriage, and still the Kohen Gadol. The final case is just a little bit of kind of an insight of what was going on, and kind of, sometimes you think people weren't really aware of, you know, the breakdown, but they were. Right, and the Gemara talks about the Gemara Numa Daf Yotes Amud Beis 19b tells the following interesting story. Ma'aseh Betzduki Echad, he says, Shehiskin mi bachutz v'hichnis biyitziyason. Right, what did he do? So there was a debate between the Sadducees and the Pharisees. So one of the things before any blood could be sprinkled in the Holy of Holies, first you had to bring in the incense and create a cloud of smoke. Right, kibe anan era el akaporis. Right, God can only be, you can only be in there with an anan, with a cloud. So for the Pharisees, based on oral law, what would they do? They would take the coals in one hand, they would take the incense in the other hand, and when they got into the Holy of Holies, they would put the incense on the coal, and then it would create a cloud of smoke inside the Holy of Holies. The Sadducees interpreted the text much more literally, kibe anan ere ala katoporet, meaning you can't even see it without there already being an anan. So the Sadducees, what would they do? They said that you should put the incense on the, what's it called? On the coals before you go into the Holy of Holies, and then walk in with the cloud already there. Okay, that was the argument, okay? Again, this was the argument between them. You'd think, oh, what are they arguing about? You know what? Read the Jewish papers and see all the ridiculous things that we argue about. You know, we should be zocha that it should be something this idealistic. Okay, so this is what's going on. So ma'aseh betzduki echad. So what did he do? Shehiski mi bachutz v'hichnis. What did he do? He put the incense on outside, and then he went in. He went according to Tzeduki halacha, not according to Farizi halacha. So what happened? Bitziaso hayasameach simcha gedola. Right, he was really happy when he got out. You know, I took it to the Pharisees. I did the avoda in the temple, not according to their rules, but I did it according to our rules, and everything is fine. What happens? Pagabo Aviv the Amarlo. So who should he meet? His father. His father sees him and says, "Bini, afa pishitz dukinanu." Even though we come from a traditional Sadducee family, what he says? Anu misyarin, anu mis minaprushim. We at least fear the Pharisees, right? We have a healthy awe of the Pharisees. Amarlo koyam ahayitzi mitzayir. So he says to him, "Listen, Daddy." He says, "My whole life I was troubled by the pasuk ki be'anan erela kapores." He says, "I was always worried about this, that I should view the kapores from a cloud. I should view the covering of the ark from a cloud." He says, "Amarti, I said to myself, masa yavo liyadi v'akaymenu. When will I have the chance to fulfill these words?" By the way, just so you see, you know, this Rabbi Akiva says the same type of statement when they're pulling his flesh from his bones and he's reciting Shema. He says, it said, "B'chol nafshecha, with all of your soul, you should love God." I wanted to know, when could I possibly fulfill these words? So this Stuki says, "I was thinking my whole life, when can I possibly, fulfill the words of having the anan hakatorah at the cloud of incense before I enter into the Kodesh Kodashim?" He says, "Achshav shabal yadi, lo akaymenu." He says, "Now that I have the chance, I shouldn't fulfill it." So Amru, they said, "Lo ayum yamim muatin." Right, it wasn't long before what happened. Ad shemes, until he died. So I wonder, you know, sometimes I read this and you know, is it ad shemes or, you know, like one of those Godfather things? You know, he died in one of those tragic accidents. You know what I mean? You know, who knows what happened? Vehu talba ashba, he was thrown into the garbage. Vayu tolain yotzim michosamo, there were worms that were coming out of his nose. Okay, so it gets really bad. But the point is, you sense here there is a tension going on. That the father, so he said, we would never have the chutzpah to go against traditional Pharisaic law in the temple. You know, we'll sit, we'll argue academically outside, we'll make our statements, you know, they're wrong, you're wrong, whatever it is. But, you know, when it comes to the temple service, you know, there's a way it goes. But all of a sudden, you know, you have where this guy feels like he has total liberty and total freedom to do whatever he is that he wants. And so what I think here is you have, I guess, part number one of the Shiur, which is the breakdown of purity and prisha, or what's it called? It says, migdatara uprishus, right? Separation. But I wouldn't be surprised of the breakdown of Pharisaic law, the loss of Pharisaic law in the temple. And again, the breakdown of the purity of the temple and the standards that were once held there before. Yeah.
Quick question. Before you read that Eleanor and Martha, when the woman came to the king, to Yannai the king, to ask him to make Shimon, was the customary that the king, whoever he was,
yeah, so the way it worked is that the procurator, in order to appease whatever constituency he needed to appease, yeah, that's where he would appoint the Kohen Gadol from. It was a very convenient system.
And if he got paid enough, it would be the other way.
Yeah.
But in better times, the Kohanim chose the Kohen Gadol.
In better times, there was a family that was the family of the Kohen Gadol.
Dynastic.
Dynastic, yeah, like the king.
From Aaron.
There were situations where the king stepped in to separate it. If you remember, I think it was Shaul changed one family to a different one. Like Yirmiyahu comes from the rejected family of Kohanim. So that it's happened before. Yeah. All right. So. What is happening outside the temple? What type of experiences are going on there? So there's an interesting Mishnah in Krisos, Perach Aleph Mishnah Zayin. Krisos are the laws relating to those prohibitions which have kares associated with them. You know, whatever, divine excision, however we might define it traditionally. So here it talks about a woman who had five impurities upon her, and all of them were doubtful. And also five ledos, she gave birth to five children. So the Mishnah says, Mevia korban echad, she can bring just one sacrifice. Ve'ocheles bezvachem, and then she can start eating from sacrifices as well, meaning she's pure. She's pure. No, meaning from a korban shlamim, anyone can eat. Right, yeah. Okay, ve'en ashar ala chova, chavesh ledos vados, if she has five definite pregnancies, v'chamesh divos vados, and she has five certain impurities. So mevia korban echad, she brings one sacrifice, ve'ochelas bezvachim, and then she can eat. And then the rest of the sacrifices that she has to bring are chova, she has to bring them, but it doesn't prevent her from becoming pure. So what happens? Maisa, a time came, she'amdu kinim b'Yerushalayim b'dinari zahav. So once upon a time, the kinim, the birds that they sold for sacrifices for women who are impure, who had just given birth, were being sold for one golden dinar. Right, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who's the son of Gamliel the first, so he's got a problem here. It's too expensive for people. So Hamaon Azel Lo Elin Halayla Achu Bidinarin. He says, I'm going to make the price go down. Nichnas LeBeisdin. So he went into the Beisdin, and what did he do? VeLimed Haisha Sheyesh La Chamesh Leidos Vados Chamesh Divos Vados Meviva Korban Echad Vochas Bezvachim. So he allowed a woman who had five responsibilities to get away with what? Just one sacrifice. What do you all just do? He significantly lowered the demand for the birds, and there all of a sudden, so the price goes down on the... So he used the halachic ruling, right, that allowed her. So this way she could save up, you know, for a while to buy the other four sacrifices that she needs. But she can go on eating from other things and she can regain purity. It's just an interesting situation that you have people, I don't know, price gouging on women who need to bring korbanos in order to become pure. I don't know, it's just an interesting thing that's going on in those terms. And Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who's again, he's going to be the de jure, I should say, leader of the Jewish people during the rebellion and immediately preceding the destruction of the temple. He is basically trying to manipulate the system using halacha. Granted, it might be the right halacha, but you know, he's announcing that in order to protect the system and have women continuing to bring these korbanot. There's an interesting statement in Pirkei Avos, Perek Aleph Mishnah Yedayin, where we get, I guess, one of the quotes from Shimon ben Gamliel. And we'll talk more about him when we deal with the rebellion. But Shimon ben Omer, Kol Yomai Gadalti Bein HaChachamim. He says, all my life I was raised amongst the wise, amongst the great scholars. V'lo matzati l'guf tov el ashtika. What's the greatest thing for your body? It's an interesting way to say it. Keep your mouth shut. V'lo amidrash ha'ikar el amaita. V'chol amar b'dvarim mevichet. Right? It's not discussions that are important, but actions. Actions speak louder than words. But talking too much will ultimately bring sin. So on the one hand, he's giving nice advice here. You know, talking too much is a sign of probably of some other issue. But again, we're dealing with a time, and we're going to see when leadership was, at least quality leadership, was very much at a premium. It was hard to find people. And when your leader is saying, I think the best thing for me to do is to keep my mouth shut, so it might be indicative of the fact that he felt like there was very little that he could do, or that there was very little that he could accomplish. And I think probably what best typifies the time is the famous story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. We've all heard the story probably numerous times, but I don't know if we've ever seen it inside or looked at it in detail and find out what we can learn historically from what's going on here. So the famous Talmudic statement is HaKamsa uVar Kamsa Charev Yushalayim. Jerusalem was destroyed because of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. Dahu Gavra, because a certain man, Derachame Kamsa uBal Debave Bar Kamsa. A certain man, he loved Kamsa, that was his friend, and the man he was in an argument with was a man named Bar Kamsa, who, I mean, if we read things technically, Kamsa is dad, Bar Kamsa is the son, right? So what do you have here? You have here a generational issue, potentially, that's going on here. And again, I think that relates, if you remember, the story about the Kohen and his son, right, about the difference in their deference to Pharisaic halacha in terms of how they viewed it. So again, there's a sense of kind of a generational gap that's going on here. So Avad Su'udasa, this person makes a meal. Amar Leila Shmai, so he says to his messenger, Zil Aisi Li Kamsa, go bring me Kamsa. And he makes a mistake in Azil Aisi Le Bar Kamsa. He brings Bar Kamsa instead. Asa, and Bar Kamsa comes, Ashkechei Dehava Yasiv, and he sees, and the Baal HaSeuda, the one making the party, sees that that Kamsa is sitting there. Amar Lei Michne Ahu Gavra Bab Debabahu Dahu Gavrahu My Bar Yisacha. He says, if we're in a fight, what's he doing here? So he comes over to him and says, Kum Puk. Right? He says, get up and leave. So Amar Lei, he says to him, Hova Asa. He says, once I'm here already, Shavkan Vayiva Vyavnalach Demei Mai Da'achil Da'achilna Vishasina. He says, once I'm here already, he says, let me pay for what I'm eating and drinking. Amar Lei, lo, says to him, no. Amar Lei, Yavina Lach Tmei Palga de Sudasich. He says to him, I'll pay you for half of whatever this party costs. Amar Lei, lo. He answers him, no. Amar Lei, Yavina Lach Tmei Kula Sudasich. He says, I'll pay for the whole party. Amar Lei, lo. Says to him, no. So, Nakte Biyade, he picks him up with his hands. V'ukmei, and he stands him up. Va'afke, and he throws him out. Amar, so says Kamta, Hoil v'havu yasvi rabbanan, since all the rabbis were sitting there, v'lo machubei, and they didn't do anything to stop him, shmamina kanichalahu. Must be that they're okay with it. So first of all, what's going on here? My sense is that there is a class issue here, right? That the person making this party, if he can afford to say, if the two of them can afford to be arguing here large amounts of money, that they're dealing with large amounts of money. And what are all the rabbanim who are there doing? They're keeping their mouths shut. They're following the words of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. What are they doing? Lo matasi leguf tov el ashtika. Right? That what the best thing to do is to keep your mouth shut. Okay? So just, so again, you pick up on historically what's a little bit of what's going on. Regardless of whether this happened or not happened. And again, you know, I quote the words of Rabbi Beryl Wein, which I think, he says just because something never happened doesn't mean it's not true. Okay, what they're making here is a statement, a cultural statement about what's going on here, which is you have class warfare going on, you have arguments going on between two people, and you have rabbis who are impotent in the face of all that's going on here. All right? And so we all know what happens, right? He says, I'm going to go, I'm going to go tell on them, or I'm going to create some sort of conspiracy against them with the king. He goes and he tells Caesar, the Jews are rebelling against you. Caesar says, who says? Go send them a sacrifice. Go see if they bring it or not. Again, you have everything coming to a head here. You have the failure of the sacrificial service. You have the internal fighting. You have the silence of the Rabbanim in the face of all that's going on here. You basically, all of the cultural, spiritual, religious failures being thrown into one place here. So Azal Shadar Biyade Egla Tilsa, a three-year-old calf they sent. Bahadi Dekaase, and on its way, what does Kamta do? Shada Bemuma Beniv Svasayim, he puts a little cut in the lip. Amrile Bedukin Shiva'ayin, some people say he does it on the eye. Duchta, the important part is that it's a place, Dili Didan Habamuma. For us, meaning for Jews, it is considered a blemish for a sacrifice to have that. But the Didhu Lav Mumahu, but for them it's not considered a blemish. Savarabana, so come the rabbis, they're in a pickle now. What do they do? Savarabanan Likruve. So the rabbis say, let's bring the sacrifice. What Mishum Shlomachus, in order for it to give peace with the monarchy. Amalahu Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulos. So Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulos says to them, Yomru Bali Muvin Kraven Legabe Mizbeach. Right? What are they going to say? Everyone's going to go around and saying, you're allowed to bring blemished animals on the altar. We can't have that. So Savar Lemikdale. So they said, let's kill Kamsa so he won't, you know, go and tell the king that we're not bringing the sacrifice. So Amar Lahu Rabbi Zachariah, Yomru Meitil Mum Bekachim Yeharek. Rabbi Zachariah says, we can't do that. Everyone's going to go around saying that anyone who puts a blemish on a sacrifice, you know, needs to be killed. We can't have that. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so says Rabbi Yochanan, on Vasanuso, it was the modesty shel Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulas. The modesty of Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulos, hechriva es beisenu, it destroyed our home, meaning the Beis HaMikdash, v'sarfa es heichaleinu, it burned our sanctuary, v'iglisanu me'arseinu, and caused us to be exiled from our land. The question is, why would it call of all things his modesty? What is modest about what Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulos is doing here? If anything, he's being bold. You know, he's standing up and saying, you know, so if you look at the same story, it's brought down in Eicha Rabbah, so it brings another detail. The Medrash Neicha Rabbah says when it tells the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, and it brought it here, Eicha Rabbah, Parsha Dalet, Halacha Gimel, Amar Leh Kum Lech. So Kamsa, so the Bala Seuda, the one who's making the meal, says, get up and go. The Hayasham Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulas, Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulas was there. The Haisa Safik Biyadu Limchos Velomicha. Right, Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulos was one of the rabbis who was there who didn't get up and say, you know, you got to leave. You know, this is inappropriate. He doesn't stand up and say that. So it's a great explanation, and if that were the truth, so then it makes sense. The problem is it doesn't really fit with the Gemara, because the Gemara seems to be blaming Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulos for the end. Number two is, in earlier editions of the Medrash Rabbah, this line isn't there. Okay, so it seems like whoever was publishing this edition of the Medrash Rabbah was trying to deal with the issue of what modesty it could possibly be talking about here, and that's the way he deals with it. But, I mean, we shouldn't be ashamed. I repeated numerous times the story of Rav David Tzvi Hoffman about how someone once came to him with a problem with Rashi, and Rav David Tzvi Hoffman said, hold on one second, and he went and he got one of the early printings of Rashi, and he says, here's your problem, and he puts parentheses about around three words in Rashi. He says, look, now Rashi makes all sense. These three words weren't in the original edition of Rashi. So the guy was very unhappy with the answer, because what kind of answer is that? Right? So he goes to another rabbi who gives him this whole long rigmarole about how, you know, really it's this and this and big chiddush, etc. And the guy was much happier with that answer. Then he goes back to Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, and the rabbi is, you know, all, you know, puffed up. You know, I had a better answer than the Rosh Yeshiva. So Rav David Tzvi Hoffman says to him, you know, it says in the Gemara, I don't know where this Gemara is, that whoever you defend in your lifetime will greet you when you come to heaven. He says, I'm pretty sure that when I get to heaven, Rashi will be there to greet me. And he says, and I'm 100% positive that when you get to heaven, the publisher will be there to greet you. Okay, that was his story. But it's a great little story. So what really is going on here? So if you do a Bar Ilan search of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulos, you see that aside from the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, he's only quoted in one other place. What is that other place? It is what to do about muktzah bones on your plate on Shabbos, right? Sometimes it happens. You have a whole bunch of bones or shells that are left on your plate, and they're muktzah. So what are you supposed to do with them? Can you throw them in the garbage? Can you take them? What can you do with them? So Beis Hillel says, this is the Tosefta and Shabbos, Perek Yedayin, Halacha Daleh. Beis Hillel says, Omrim magbiim yal ha-shulchan atzamos ha-klipim. Beis Hillel says you're allowed to take them off. Right? You're allowed to remove them. Beis Shammai omrim mesalik ha-tav l'kula u-minara. Beis Shammai says you pick up the table as a whole, because the table is a basis, a davar ha-asr ve-amutr. The table is a basis for both things that are allowed and not allowed. You pick up the whole table and shake it off. Right? Comes along Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulos, and he needs to weigh in on this argument. Rav Zechariah ben Avkulos lo haya noheg lo kedivrei Beis Shammai velo kedivrei Beis Hillel. Right? Rav Zechariah ben Avkulos wouldn't hold like Beis Shammai and he wouldn't hold like Beis Hillel. What do you do? Ela no tell umashlich la'achar amita. He would never allow the bones to fall on his plate in the first place so that he shouldn't have to worry about this. What would he do? He would, you know, chew the meat off the bones and then chuck it behind the sofa. Right before he had to put it down. That's what it says. Like, la'achar mita behind the sofa. I'm sure his wife loved it. Right? Right? And that's what he would do. And now comes along Rabbi Yossi, and he says, an vasanuso, it is the modesty shal Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkila shasarfa etzayicha. Right? It is his modesty. What is his modesty? The modesty of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulos was the modesty of the entire generation, which was of rabbinic leadership, which was what? They're indecisive. Right? They couldn't just come to a decision. This is what we believe. You know? And that's what happens here. Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulos, what was he good at doing? He was good at pointing out the problems with both solutions. You can't bring the korban, then everyone's going to think we're allowed to bring korbans with blemishes. You can't kill them, because then everyone's going to think you kill people who put blemishes in sacrifices. So let's just throw up our hands and do nothing. You know, let's just chuck the bones behind the sofa. Right, Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulos is symbolic of the time. A time when rabbinic leadership was devalued, and instead you went to military leadership, you know, and what happens in a vacuum of leadership, whatever is, you know, simplest and most basic is going to take up. So who's going to step forward? You know, who's going to step forward is the zealots, is the people in favor of, you know, just of rebelling against Rome and you know trying to overthrow and you know rebuild a Jewish commonwealth. You know they're going to be people like that who are the extremists, and then on the other side you're going to have the, you know, the Roman sympathizers and the voices of reason who are supposed to be decisive, the Hillels, the Rabban Gamliel Hazaken, who took bold decisions, you know, in the face of a changing world. They are not there. They're not the ones who are setting up. And that's why you're ultimately going to have this ultimate failure. So I think what we see here from this, you know, kind of, I guess, kind of vast array or this amalgamation of rabbinic literature is you see a society that is in crisis, basically a crisis of purity, a crisis of religion, a crisis of culture. You have culture wars going on. You have class war going on. You have basically a breakdown of the spiritual world in terms of the Beis HaMikdash, in terms of the purity that was going on there. And you have a rabbinic leadership that is unable to deal decisively with what it is that's going on. And all these Gemaras put together, you know, create that. And what you're going to get is, yes, you know, Sinas Chinam destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Because the lowest common denominator took over. And that's what we're going to see a little bit more of next time. Okay.
Sounds like
yeah.